Ryan Rashog joins us. Shogger, how are you?
I'm doing well. That's a great package too. I do a lot of shopping at Dirk's, and it's a rock solid spot.
It's a very good place. Yes, Sterling might be the best dressed guy in Edmonton.
Yeah, for sure. And he's the one solely responsible for some of the stuff that has turned heads more than a few times as you walk into the dressing room. Fashion forward. They have the ability to be conservative there. They can be right on fashion, or they can be fashion forward. That's the beauty of Dirk's. And you at times have gone fashion forward and drawn some attention. And it's solid. Always solid.
And always a few months later, I find you end up buying those same shirts. So that's what I always
do. I got to let you get the ridicule first and then make sure everybody's okay, we're good.
It's all right, buddy. It's all right. I could be the leader. I have no problem.
You have been the fashion leader of the Edmonton Media Corps. You and Johnny Liu, our friend in Montreal.
Yeah, Johnny, he's got good fashion sense, too. He's got sick shoe sense. Much better shoe sense than I. He's a shoe guy, for sure.
He hasn't worn a belt in, like, 5 years, though. All his suits, he doesn't wear belts with his suits. And
really?
It's the style. It's the thing, right? But I can't imagine not wearing a belt with my suit.
Yeah, that's a rarity. That's a rarity. Lou can pull it off, but I definitely couldn't. I got to have a belt.
No belt and a bow tie. I can't imagine that.
No, Herbie got a little bit of a strap today. For people that haven't heard it, these are the comments that Ed Herbie made yesterday.
That question, I've had a chance to talk with Chris, and he hasn't, he's assured me that he hadn't spoken to him directly. I mean, as far as this league is concerned, we know tampering does happen. It does. You know, we do it. Everyone does it. You know, it's just a part of the CFL. They don't want to hear you say it, but it happens.
And the CFL today fined Ed Hervey $1,500 for basically
telling the truth.
Yeah, pretty much. And for comments which bring the league into disrepute was the official comment from the league. But what's funny about it is, so evidently the Saskatchewan Rough Riders can leak out all the information, the exact dollars they will pay Chris Jones to Gary Lawless. Good on Lawless for doing his job. Like, who else you get those numbers from? You know what I mean? Like, but nothing happens to that. So it's I know Eskimo fans are livid here on text message about it.
Well, I mean, look, there's Ed is a smart guy, and I mean, he had to know he's going to get fined for saying that, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he went into the press conference planning to get fined.
Yeah.
But I think it was Adam Cook from CTV who asked him the question about the timing of that news coming out and if he felt maybe there was some tampering done by Saskatchewan. And that's what elicited that response from Ed. And so it's one thing to have this kind of dirty little secret that nobody really talks that openly about. Everybody kind of does, and it's one of those things that just kind of stays quiet. It's another thing to parade it out in front of everybody and kind of thumb your nose at the league a little bit and just be like, hey, this happened. Now, Ed doesn't care. Ed does his thing. Ed says what he says. Ed's got a strong personality. I imagine he's a pretty strong personality within that group. And maybe sometimes it's a little bit tough for others around the league to take. But he is a straight shooter. And sometimes that'll get you into trouble when you're a straight shooter. So I think the league probably didn't have much of a choice but to do that. And, that's the price you pay sometimes for being really blunt and forthcoming, as Ed tends to be.
One potential free agent down for the Eskimos as they re-sign Watson to a two-year extension today. Ricky Ray signs a two-year extension with the Toronto Argonauts. And, the list today for the free agents in the CFL is the biggest we've ever seen and likely still will be come February 9th. There's going to be a significant amount of players re-signed between now and then.
Yeah, for sure. You got to get – and that's where you got to get a lot of your good work done. And, Ed – I mean, Ed's philosophy on free agents, too, is not to leave them swinging in the breeze, not knowing where they stand, not knowing if they're wanted, not knowing, not being taken care of, just as far as being clear on how their organization feels about them. I think that's maybe one of the things that bugged them about the way things were done in the past, is guys were hurtling towards free agency without really understanding where they stood with the organization. And there's no reason not to have those conversations ahead of time and be thorough and let guys know where they stand. Be honest with them. Be up front. And that way, you hit free agency. There's two advantages to it. First and foremost, you get a sense from the player on their willingness to stick around when you're upfront and honest with them. And secondly, if you know that they're not going to, or if the interest isn't there, you can get a head start on paring down your list and getting ready to go well far in advance. And I think in the past, I mean, you talked to some guys, and they probably wouldn't necessarily talk about it on the record, but I think sometimes it's been left way too late. And that's not the way Ed rolls. So I think conversations have been had, are being had. I'm pretty sure Ed has a pretty good idea exactly who's going to be back and who won't, and probably has plan B, C, and D in place.
Oh, I think you look at that. Les, as I said, Willie Jefferson, from day one, I said that's the guy who's going to the NFL, and he's got two workouts later this month. Just his size, he's played in the NFL for 2 years, and he was in a room with guys smoking weed. He was not a real star player, so a team's like, yeah, we don't want it. So boom, he gets released to spend his time in Edmonton, and he will be back. I'd be stunned if he's not signed by an NFL team, just because his size and his ability, his quickness, everything like that. Other than that, for Eskimo players, I don't see any. I know some will have aspirations. Doesn't mean they'll actually get any calls to go to camp and risk banging their body up and then getting hurt and not getting CFL money. So I think most of them will ultimately be back that the Eskimos want. And then we'll see afterwards, if some leave for Saskatchewan and Chris Jones, potentially. I don't see a mass exodus, though, however, in that sense. I do want to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. Okay. And, a win last night that full marks for the victory. It was one where I'm sure at time fans are like, oh, goodness, not another moral victory when Boston scored late. But Edmonton unable to capitalize on the power play in three-on-three, but did win in a shootout. Nielsen is 6-0, actually, in shootouts in his NHL career, including 2-0 this season. Hasn't allowed a goal on the four shot attempts that he has faced. And Eberle is now 2-for-2 in his last two shots. And you know what? If the Oilers play more like that, I think 500 is a realistic number from now until the end of the season.
That would be some pretty significant improvement. And the one thing this team has shown is that it can actually throw a good game out there when they put their minds to it. But the issue has been consistency, and it's been doing it in back-to-back games and pushing through and getting back-to-back wins. I don't have the schedule right in front of me, but I know they haven't put back-to-back wins together very many times this year. And it's not that they haven't put good efforts back-to-back. It's wins back-to-back because it needs to at some point become about wins. So I think 500 would be an improvement. I think they're probably capable of it. Much more doable when Connor McDavid is back on the scene. But as for last night, I did think that they responded well to the sort of the pressures they were under. The pressures from an upset, frustrated Peter Chiarelli, the pressures from an upset, frustrated Todd McClellan coming off a bad road trip. Not all that refreshed. I mean, that's a long road trip. You get home, and without a few days to get your legs under you and start feeling better, there's a time zone change. Some of the guys had been sick. So that's a good bounce-back game for them. That was not an easy – they were at home, but that was not an easy home game. And they did what they had to do. Now, you can pick it apart a little bit and say, well, they needed to hang on to that lead and weren't able to. And, yeah, the power play was a struggle, and special teams-wise, it was – a little bit tough. I mean, that power play gave up, what, two or three two-on-ones through the course of that game. But they managed to persevere and get it done and pull 2 points out of a game where a lot of eyes were on them wondering would they be able to do that. And in a against a Boston team that was feeling good about itself and has some decent players, that's a good win for the Oilers. That's a very solid win for them. And I thought some guys that have been under fire lately, between Eberle and Nugent Hopkins, I thought those two played pretty well. Jordan was clearly trying to get to that blue paint, had a couple opportunities to score. I mean, he's got to bury them. But I thought the effort level was better and the willingness to get to the dirty areas was better.
Shogar, the Oilers have won back-to-back games basically once this year. They beat Vancouver and Calgary. They actually did win three in a row, and then they beat Detroit at home. But they haven't won back-to-back home games. They did it once last season. That's it at any point in the season. So they will try for that in the same homestand, that is.
That's such a bad trade, isn't it?
That's such a bad trade,
not being able to piece two solid wins together. Right, and maybe that's got to have Todd McClellan just pulling his hair out. Because, so what's the problem? Do they spend too much time patting themselves on the back after a win? Is it a letdown the following game because they're feeling okay about themselves? Does Todd need to be harder on them after their wins? Rather than let them relish a win and feel good about themselves, does he need to go in there and pound on them even more about the mistakes they made in the win? That's got to be a difficult puzzle for a coach to figure out how to take a team that rewards itself far too much for wins when they're way too far, few and far between.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. And it's, you know, it's a physical part of their game, you know, just mentally tough more than anything else. Did you happen to read Speck's article today?
No, I haven't seen him yet. Oh. What was Speck writing today?
Well, he had some comments from Eastern and Western executives about the Oilers and what they would do and which players they would trade. And basically, to a man, said they wouldn't trade Taylor Hall. Of all of them, none said they would move McDavid or Draisaitl. But what's interesting was, now, they didn't put their name to it. I understand why. But a lot of executives, if you read the article, and I'd recommend it to fans, that a lot of them stated how they felt Nugent, Hopkins, and Eberle were soft players to play against.
Yes.
I'm not surprised by that in Eberle's case, to be honest, but I'm a little surprised, not blown away, that others feel that way about Nugent Hopkins. What do you think?
Well, no, I'm not surprised that they think that. I mean, the players, when you talk about being easy to play against, it's because they don't hit you, and they're not overly physical. They don't necessarily dig in and make life tough on you. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're soft players all the time, but there's a difference between being easy to play against and being a softer player. And those guys, I would say that Eberle and Nugent Hopkins are easy players to play against. For sure they are. I mean, Taylor Hall's not an easy player to play against. He's always got pressure on you. He can hit you. He'll outwork you in the corners. He has that he can be physically imposing when he wants to be, whereas those other guys aren't like that necessarily. And I think we're in a little bit of a fishbowl here, right? Everybody in this market that has seen these guys come along from the beginning and through the draft and all the pain that the team had to go through to get them, I just think when you take a step way outside the bubble and look back in, as Mark Spector did with the article today, I imagine, you get a lot of different views and much different than the ones that exist here in this market. And I think if Spec was trying to get a sample of that, I think that's well played, because in this market, I think overvaluing the assets that the team has is just, and I think it happens in every market. I'm not being critical of Oilers fans. I think every team that has passionate fans, they value their assets a ton. But the reality is, when you're working that phone, if I would have said the day we heard that Travis Hamonic was available, if I would have said that they probably couldn't get that deal done for Jordan Eberle, I think people would have immediately been like, what? Are you crazy? What, they couldn't get Hamonic for Eberle? But I actually think that's kind of the reality. And so it doesn't add up the way I think a lot of people in the market feel like it should. And that's, Nugent Hopkins is in there and included in that.
It will be interesting to see, you know, and that's obviously a few executives' opinions. That doesn't mean it's everybody's. There's probably a lot of people that you know, see attributes and they're high on them, no doubt. But no, I don't see a major move coming anytime soon. I do think, though, in 2 years, the harsh reality is the Oilers can't afford all of their top six forwards. That's just a fact. So people, you know what, embrace yourself, because eventually some of them are getting traded. They're not going to have all of them on big contracts. It does not happen on any team around the NHL. The Oilers will be no different, unless you expect them to just be crap and never have some balanced goaltending who's going to get paid something, or defensemen who are eventually going to get paid something. So, you know, people have to accept that eventually some of them are going to get moved. It's just how the NHL works. And, you know, do you think it's a foregone conclusion 100% that one of them gets traded before the draft?
I would be surprised at this point. And now, you got to remember, we're sitting here with the team in the place it's in, without Connor McDavid in the lineup, judging the team kind of on what it looks like now. So it depends on how they finish. If they have a fantastic finish and play higher end hockey and compete at a different level and maybe finish strong, I mean, having Connor McDavid in the lineup makes everybody better. It makes the defense better. It makes his wingers better. It makes everybody better. And so, who knows what the finish looks like and what we're talking about at that point. But what I'd say is that I believe Peter Chiarelli has a model in his mind of what a team needs to look like to compete and be successful. And I think that the forward group does not match what he envisions as a successful group. And so good pieces are going to get moved. I believe that untouchable in his mind are Connor McDavid, Taylor Hall, Leon Draisaitl, Darnell Nurse. I think those four are the truly untouchables. Perhaps Oscar Klefbom, I'm not sure. But I think the other guys are not considered untouchable by the general manager. That would be my guess. And so everything is on the table for trying to build the type of team he believes is going to win. As crazy as that might drive everybody in Edmonton that loves Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or Jordan Eberle and thinks these are, you know, fantastic players, which they are. They're very, very good players. Peter Chiarelli's not married to these players in any way, shape, or form. He just got here. He just looks at it and goes, hey, this is what I think the team needs to look like to win. This is what they look like. Not moving those guys. I'm going to build around those guys. So what can we get for the rest of these guys? And if the answer is enough in his mind, he makes the trades. It's simple.
Yeah, it is simple, and I think it's going to happen.
He's not going to rush anything. He's not going to be stupid and make a trade. He will not make a trade just for the sake of making a trade. Throw that idea out the window.
Okay. Right?
Throw it out the window. He will not just try and shake up his lineup. He's not reactionary, and the team is not in a position where they need to do that. So he'll be calm. He'll be collected about it. He's not going to trade them while they're not playing great. He's going to wait and trade players when they have higher value. He's going to be intelligent about it. Nobody's suggesting that he's not or that he shouldn't be. But he looks at his core, says, I'm not going to touch those guys. How can I fix things with everybody else? And he'll do what he has to do.
Shogar, tomorrow on the show, now I'll tease it, but I won't ask it now. Okay. A question that I actually think is going to be a more difficult decision for Peter Chiarelli.
So
we will touch on that on tomorrow's show.
So you're not going to tell me what it is so I can think about it ahead of time?
No, that's
it.
Well, I might tell you about it off air, but okay. Not to. I want our listeners to tune in tomorrow for the Rashog Report.
Text me tonight.
No, I'm not texting
you.
I'll text you 10 minutes before. You know, I don't know, 2 minutes before. That'll be good.
Okay, sounds good, man.